You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Third hour of Wake Up Tucson on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. We're hanging out with our friend Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
And this Saturday, 12 noon at the fabulous Maverick on Tanque Verde, not Tranque Verde, that's a different road, Tanque Verde, okay? We're going to be doing the showing of the documentary Gotaways about the border crisis effect on communities in America, and then we'll have a moderated by moi, that's for my girl at the U of A, moi. We're going to have a discussion with Heather Lappin, Commander Watkins, and then the county attorney from Cochise, right?
Brian McIntyre, and don't forget, good friend of the show, Grant Kruger, will be mixing up cocktails behind the bar, putting on a Tom Cruise from Cocktail type of performance.
Wow.
You didn't know Grant could do that, did you?
I did know he could do it. I just didn't know he was working that day, and what kind of chaps is he wearing? That's what I want to know. So
the only kind.
One more time. Anyway, tickets at TucsonCrimeFree.com, $10. And if you buy them at the door, $15.
Yep.
Is Patra still there? Oh, thanks for holding on. Josh, we're going to continue our discussion, our interview with Adrian Wuhrer there, but let's get to Patra. Patra lives in the neighborhood near Oracle and Grant. Hey, Patra, what's up, my friend?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
We're okay. What's going on with you?
Well, I heard your guys' show, and I wanted to say to Josh and all the business people, thank you very much for what you're doing. And the other thing I want to say, Chris, is, you know, I always email you and I complain about this and that and stuff. But, you know, by calling in, I can say thank you and Matt very much for everything you do for our community. I mean, I can't believe a little person like me gets a voice on your show. And I really appreciate that. And just keep up the good work.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We're just trying to
thank you, Patra.
Trying to do the right thing here.
You have the patience of Job, Patra.
So give us the state of the neighborhood over there, Patra. What's going on?
Oh well, we got homeless abound, and the police are doing better since we had that shooting a couple weeks ago with getting them moved off the street. But they just come right back.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a lot of that this morning while I was picking up all the trash. Oh, by the way, we have the cleanest street in the nearest square mile.
Why is that?
That's because I'm out there six mornings a week picking it up.
And what do you clean up on the streets of your neighborhood?
Broken bottles. Today I got a needle and a big pile of just, you know, they go through the dumpsters on trash day and they'll take them out and they'll rip them open and leave them laying there in front of someone's property or a business. And because the business owners around this on this street are so good to me, you know, they let me use their dumpsters and stuff. I pick up their parking lots too.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the kind of stuff I run into on a daily basis. And
that's a tough area, Patra. And thank you for doing your part to clean that up. McGarry's discount store is right there on the northwest corner. And they're actually pretty active Tucson Crime Free Coalition members talking about the issues that they're having. Very similar to you, doing everything they can to keep that area clean, but they're definitely trying to run a good business, and so my hat is off to you, Patra.
Oh well, you know, my hat's off to you guys, all of you. Think it's wonderful for what you're doing for our community, and just keep it up. I'm not giving up the fight for my street.
Amen, sister.
I'm not on the west side. I'm on the east side of Oracle.
Yeah.
And I pick up from Stone to Oracle on my street. And if we could just have one person on each street doing that, it would be a wonderful thing. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I like your optimism.
I'm retired, and I get it, because when I was working full-time, there's no way I would have the energy, you know, to do what I'm doing right now. But, again, I didn't call to complain this time, Chris. I really wanted to say thank you guys all very, very much from the bottom of my heart.
Well, you're very welcome, and we're going to keep fighting, so thank you.
Okay, you guys take care and have a wonderful day.
All right, Patra, God bless.
Bye, Patra.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's get Billy on the line before we go to break, and then we'll play the rest of the Adrian Wehr interview with Kevin Daly. What's up, Billy?
Good morning. You know, the thing that is probably the most insidious part of what the city is doing is they're basically telling private property ownership rights are a secondary, tertiary, or even not even a consideration when it comes to their policy and procedures. The lack of understanding amongst average business owners, people out there, that you know, your private property rights, they secure something beyond just your physical ownership of a piece of dirt, an automobile, whatever. That private property right starts with the ability of you as a person to have say over what happens to you. The private property rights of the physical thing is the natural progression of it. Because the city, mayor, and council are purposely telling through their policy positions, through their budget decisions, etc., that your private property rights no longer matter or not a high consideration, they are saying that you, as an individual, as a business owner, you name it, you don't matter. Yes, you see it in the consequences of, you know, crime, et cetera, but the insidious part of it is they're telling you, you don't matter to them.
Vote yes on Prop 312.
Thank you.
Amen.
Billy, thanks for the call. Have a great day, my friend.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, we got to go to break. We're going to play, before we let Josh, we got one more segment with Josh. We're going to play a little bit more of this interview with Professor Wehr from the formerly of the University of Arizona, putting up with fentanyl hell all of his neighbors at the Navajo Wash. So you're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. 8:21 in the morning, you're on Wake Up Tucson. I don't want to run out of time with this. We're going to get back to this interview with Adrian Wehr, retired U of A professor, his lawsuit with him and his neighbors against the city of Tucson for enabling fentanyl camps in the Navajo Wash. We learned from the interview that one Josh, and Josh is here from the Tucson Crime Free, remember Saturday, Maverick, 12 noon, Gotaway's movie. Please join us, TucsonCrimeFree.com. That I didn't realize the city was providing them tents.
Yep. Outfitting the folks that are declining services, outfitting them with the gear to essentially stay on the street, which...
I mean, that's even the worst part of it, right? Is you said, look, if you want services, you got to go with us to some shelter.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that they're enabling them to stay in the camps and crap up the place, do their drugs, mischief, stealing, all of these things is off the charts. And it sounds like once they went to their homeless protocol thing and went to bureaucrats and the cops were no longer involved unless someone's basically bleeding and dying, and even that's borderline probably, it exploded even worse.
That's exactly what Mr. Wehr is saying. That's what we have observed. You know, when somebody reports issues with an encampment, we know that it's going to be weeks and weeks before any sort of follow-up is ever performed.
And the city, according to Professor Wehr, in the court case, said that 90% of the Fenty heads are refusing services, shelter services.
Correct. And we would actually say that's probably, at this point, it's a higher percentage than that.
Gotcha.
And you're about to hear how the neighbors have had to change their lifestyles and their routines because of all this.
All right, let's hit it, my friend.
of Tucson, you know, you're bringing up syringes. Has the city of Tucson ever given you any training or advice about how to manage needles?
No, but we give our volunteers that advice. We say, you know, assume there are needles. So don't go, you know, grabbing like the garbage cans, emptying that with bare hands.
So, you know, you come home each day, and I mean, what does it feel like? I mean, what, as you know, personally, I mean, can you describe?
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. You know, we've lived here for 25 years and many of our neighbors more. We just had our neighborhood meeting in the Wash on Sunday, and there was a neighbor who'd been here 37 years living in the area. And so people are vested in the area, and they remember that it wasn't always like this. People remember walking to the mini-mart at night. They won't do that. There's a feeling of frustration, a little bit of fear, too. You know, when we go on vacation, we sneak out the back now. My wife doesn't like to leave because she worries that if we leave, the homeless, you know, they can see us just as well as we can see them, that they're going to know we're going and they're going to come over and rob and pillage our property like they do the mailboxes throughout the neighborhood.
So a couple minutes ago, some young students, two female young students, probably, what would you say, 19, 20, were walking to their car after, I think, being dropped off by the cat tram. Right. Can you relate what they shared with us?
Yeah, well, they were as frustrated as we are about the conditions in the Wash. They pay quite a bit for a parking permit, for the privilege to park there. And they don't feel safe parking there sometimes when they come home at night. As I pointed out, the street lights are off and out. You know, we know from the U of A police report, for going back 2 years, that there have been break-ins in the car, that students have been assaulted. So I understand the fear of those women. I think it's well justified.
So, Adrian, back to the lawsuit again. What was the outcome that you want, that you asked for, and how did the city respond? Were there also some intermediate steps that before it actually went to trial?
Right. Yeah. In the original complaint that we filed, we asked for homeless camps to be banned from this property, or in the city's jargon, to make it a tier three. And we did that simply because it would restore it to the intentional uses that the master plan had described. The city responded when we went to negotiate. The judge required us to do pretrial negotiations. They said, if you want to dictate policy, then run for public office. But otherwise, you know, we get to decide.
Wow.
Way to be responsive to constituents.
Go F yourself is what they told Professor Wuhr.
Loosely translated.
Yes.
Making a ban on it. Interestingly, the city of Phoenix said the same thing. And the judge there said, you may decide how you remedy a situation, but you do not get to decide if you enforce the laws.
Wow.
So the policy is, how do you enforce the laws, not if you enforce the laws. So we're asking them to enforce the laws and to keep the homeless out of this Wash.
How did the trial end?
Well, we're waiting.
Okay, and
so the judge is has, you know, heard all the evidence and his arguments. He has a recommended 60 days to release his decision, but they aren't held to that. So he could say he needs more time, and we could be here a year from now and still not have a decision. But I'm hoping that we'll hear something by June, and that will have some legal clarity on how this property is going to be managed in the future, so that we can start, you know, moving forward with getting it back to the way it was.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. How much money is this guy out and his friend and his neighbors on court fees? It's got to be off the charts.
So court cases like this, trials like this, litigation like this is not cheap. And this is somebody that felt strong enough to take on this financial burden and do it. And we are seeing this across the city, people that we're talking to. I was just talking to a nonprofit yesterday where once things get so bad in your front yard, you might be somebody that had a different perspective. But when you see it up close, when it affects you, your livelihood, the safety of your family, the safety of your neighbors, you start to see things through a different perspective. And the people that have luxury beliefs, the people that are far enough away from this type of stuff and feel like they can turn a blind eye, well, their opinion gets changed real quick when it personally affects them. But Mr. Ward is he's a hero in our book. We think that he's got a lot of bravery for taking on the city this way. He never wanted to do this.
All right. Go to TucsonCrimeFree.com to watch that. I also posted that on my Facebook page at Christopher D. Simone. TucsonCrimeFree.com. It's where you're going to get your tickets for Gotaways, the movie, and a forum moderated by me with Heather Lappin and a couple of folks from Cochise County.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for doing some great radio today.
Thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing everybody Saturday.
All right. Josh Jacobson, the legend that he is. All right. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 of the Voice. You know, what's always frustrating about this situation that we've talked with Josh over the last 90 minutes is this is not a left or a right thing. It's just there, right? It's an unwillingness to do the right thing by the City Council of Tucson and four of the five Pima County Board of Supes.
Look, when you're living life that you don't like to leave your house because you know as soon as you leave, they're watching you leave. They know when you're sleeping. They know when you're awake. It's like bad Santa Claus, you know?
It's definitely bad
and,
Santa.
Oh, they're leaving. They'll be gone for an hour. Let's go help ourselves. I was just told yesterday about somebody who lives in what we would call a Tony neighborhood here in town near a famous pink hotel. And the whole neighborhood got broken into. And they were all fentanyl addicts who did drugs in the houses. And, oh, I don't know, ate food. This is not your garden variety. You know, this is not your garden variety thieves, right? They're doing drugs in the house. They're helping themselves to the food, and they're helping themselves to your belongings, some of which probably are not replaceable.
Correct. It's sitting there right in front of you. And
when we go on vacation, we have to clandestinely pack our vehicle so people don't know we're putting luggage in our vehicle.
Correct.
It's just wackadoodle.
Under siege. This is what it is living in Rahina's liberal paradise. You are constantly under siege. That's where you're at. And we'll see what happens. All right, let's go to the phones. Making his second appearance, I figure he would have told Fattis, I don't want to go on that guy's show again. Dr. John Ertl from Solidarity HealthShare, Chief Medical Officer. John, welcome back.
Good morning. Great to be here with you.
How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing all right, except for the fact that I'm on your show right now.
See, so. This is what we're talking about. Oh, let's give the doc a ding for that one. There we go. So I'm looking at your piece here talking about nearly half of dementia cases could be avoided. So let's talk about, and it's World Alzheimer's Month in September, but what I'd like to know from you first off is talk about what is, there seems to be a, is there a growing prevalence of such things? In relation to the dementia Alzheimer's world, are we just diagnosing it better as technology got better? All of the above. What you think?
Yeah, so it's definitely growing in prevalence. And so a lot of the actual developed countries, when we start to be able to have, we're overweight and we have huge amounts of diabetes that are continually out of control. These are all correlative to Alzheimer's. And so this is what this paper is actually talking about as far as these preventative measures. But we definitely see an increase in Alzheimer's and dementia cases nationwide. The other thing is as we live longer, we're dealing with these more complex neurodegenerative and more complex diseases. And so this is, you know, cancer and Alzheimer's alike, as far as this goes, that are, again, leading to more incidents as we age.
So when we talk about that they could be avoided, talk about, you know, what are we talking about? The steps? Is it just, you know, is it diet? What are the things that were, do we take too many pharmaceuticals? I'm always a little suspect of that.
Yeah, well, no, and for good reason. You know, there was a recent Alzheimer's medication that just came on out. It treats the plaques of Alzheimer's. One of the things that, again, it's a very costly medication. It has, you know, a good amount of side effects. And at the same time, it's not really, I haven't been as impressed with its actual effectiveness in treating the actual disease. And so, but when you see that, again, it's a huge burden to our Medicare system. But when you actually are starting to see that this paper that came on out, it's from The Lancet, which is a very reputable journal, but it was saying that, again, that if you take these preventative measures, and again, a lot of them are just working with the body, nothing that's hugely, difficult to do, you can actually prevent Alzheimer's disease by up to 50%, which is just a staggering number, thinking that how many people are concerned about Alzheimer's in their old age or have dealt with a loved one who have had a very difficult time with the actual diagnosis and seeing how debilitating it is. And so if you can prevent something by 50%, I think it's something that we should be taking a look at. And a lot of these things are not medication induced. They're lifestyle changes and changes as far as being able to motivate ourselves to be able to stay healthy so we can have a good old age.
So number one, as Keith Jackson would say, the granddaddy of maladies, cardiovascular health. Are we getting better with this, or Americans are getting heavier and heavier and eating more crap, so this is still just as bad as it ever was?
Well, one of the things, yeah, so when you actually start to see cardiovascular health being correlative with Alzheimer's, you know, things like high blood pressure and cholesterol, even diabetes, can all lead to, again, increased risk. One, I know you have a lot of people that will just go on to drugs, statin medications. I'm not a huge proponent of. I think they're also causing some side effects as far as this goes. But again, diet and lifestyle medications or instead of medications can be great to be able to help manage your high blood pressure and your cholesterol in a normal, natural way. But again, being able to manage that and just in general is able to actually lead to dementia and Alzheimer's disease prevention. So you don't want your cholesterol to be elevated, but at the same time, the other thing with cholesterol, it's not part of this topic as far as dementia, but being able to actually work on not just the number of cholesterol that your total cholesterol or your bad LDL cholesterol is, but making sure that it's not getting oxidized or having inflammatory risk along with the actual cholesterol as well.
So if you put the other one on this, you mentioned it earlier, diabetes. Talk about the diabetes, because the effect of diabetes making all these other bad things happen in your body. Let's talk through a little bit of the American lifestyle in relation to diabetes, because, again, we just want to take medicines, but we keep eating crap food, crap sugar, all this stuff. Where are you at in the sugar world?
Yeah. Well, this is so actually some people actually you'll see, and I actually refer to many times to my patients that Alzheimer's is a type 3 diabetes, that it's an out of control glucose levels in the actual brain. And so this is where when you actually are looking at how do you actually control Alzheimer's, being able to support it with the sugars can actually be very supportive. But if we're not changing the diet and we're just, requiring medications upon medications and not actually removing sugars or having balanced diet with healthy protein and healthy fats in our diet, then again, we're kind of putting lipstick on a pig or being able to put a Band-Aid over the actual real issue that's going on as we have our weight is out of control and our glucose levels are out of control, but we think the medication is there to be able to solve it. Unfortunately, the medication is not enough to be able to really solve the diabetes problem, to be able to make sure that your diet and exercise, getting your steps in, is really a critical thing.
over the last couple of years. I don't have diabetes. I never had diabetes, but a friend got me, said I need to read a book called The Diabetes Code by Dr. Fung, the endocrinologist out of Canada. And then that led to the obesity code. But he goes through all of the things about, well, why are you giggling?
Well, no, it's true. No, it's very true. I think that those are great books because, again, it's one of these, if we just keep circling these issues instead of actually seeing the elephant in the room, again, then again, we're distracted and we're not getting the results that we want to. And that's really for Americans. Again, oftentimes it's taking the time and the resources, and many times it is challenging work, you know, but again, many times you're not getting this information from a doctor in a 5-minute appointment. You need to be able to do some of this research and be motivated, and those answers are out there, and you can actually see amazing life shifts. I mean, being able to control your glucose levels and increase blood flow to the brain, you're starting to be able to have better memory, even if you're not Alzheimer's, right? Even if you don't have dementia, being able to control the actual glucose levels are going to lead to better activity at work, better mental acuity, and increased energy levels as well. And so who doesn't want that, you know? So I think one of these things is making sure that we're not just taking more medications thinking that this is going to help, but really, are we living the kind of optimal life and the actual outcomes that we're looking for? This is really the hope and the promise of what you can do as far as if you're making these lifestyle changes to not just control the glucose, but yeah, making sure that you're in less pain, increased energy, increased mental output if you're doing these things to work with the body. If that makes sense, you know?
No, it does.
Sometimes we don't like to think in 20 years that I'm going to have a disease. But what it's going to do for you right now, even helping with libido, you know, that's one of the things that drives a lot of men into the actual doctor office is actually working on libido. But again, these are things that all help, you know, exercise. One of the things that it was said that I like to always mention as well is to my patients as well is that 30 minutes of exercise, even just getting steps in a day, is just as good or maybe even better in the research than going on something like Viagra. So again, it becomes very exciting as far as being able to say, how can I shift and make these changes right now that I can actually optimize my health?
My last thing on Dr. Fung, he tells a powerful story because he always goes to some big diabetes conference for North America every year, and he gets there and all the sponsors are the drug companies, right? You see the banners up there, and there's always some new rollout of a drug, right? Of something that's going to change it all. And then there's always the talks about the trends in diabetes, and he keeps looking at the line graph and it keeps going up every year, even though we've had all these magic drugs. He goes, there's something wrong here.
It's so true. It is. It's that elephant in the room, and that, you know, it is one of these areas too, that the diabetes medications, I'm in, you know, at Solidarity as well. We share into these, you know, prescription medications, and you see just the increased cost of these diabetes medications, and yet you have something like exercise that is so effective, and yet it's not being prescribed because it's cheap and it's free, and yet it works. It's so good to be able to get your 10,000 steps in a day, and it does a lot of good for a lot of different systems within the body.
Hey, Dr. John, can you hold on for a commercial break? I want to get into education cognitive when we come back, okay?
Sure.
All right, we're hanging out and getting smarter by talking to Dr. John Ertl from SolidarityHealthShare.org, a much better way to, and a not just a better for your wallet, but also, you know, informed by the doctrines of the Catholic Church here, a lot more moral way to pay for your healthcare costs. So you're on Wake Up Tucson. Go to SolidarityHealthShare.org to find out how they can help you do all of this. All right, you're on Wake Up Tucson.
Chris versus the Cables, part 17.
Absolutely. Our bumps battle today was Johnny Cash versus Willie Nelson. And it's always good to talk non-politics with a smart man like Dr. Ertl from Solidarity Health Share. And that song we just heard by Willie of Whiskey River, this is not part of our improved lifestyle choices to keep diabetes down in our lives. Just want to let everyone know that, all right? So slow your roll, everybody. Dr. Ertl, we're talking about improving the lives of people that could be suffering from dementia. We're talking about a Lancet study that came out, and we're talking about how up to 50% of dementia cases could be either, you know, very severely reduced through some basic stuff. We talked about health through lifestyle choices and cardiovascular diabetes. Let's go to number two here, which is education and cognitive engagement. So we just know a lot of people that when they retire, they say, I'm going to retire and watch Matlock and play golf, and then they don't really move their brain too much. I assume this is, of course, a large problem.
Yeah, Chris, that's exactly right. Being able to continue to be able to challenge the brain as you continue to be able to get older, and don't stop learning. You know, some of these are some easy things like crossword puzzles, Sudoku, maybe learning a new instrument. But again, being able to keep engaging the brain and challenging your brain for new mental activities. Don't just veg on the couch and putting pause on the actual mental cognition.
I also have seen things where you're improving on any sort of hand-eye coordination. Now, I just started playing pickleball in the last few months, and I saw an actual thing about playing pickleball because of the hand-eye coordination of watching the ball and coordinating it to the paddle. Or anything that does hand-eye coordination is also pretty important when it comes to...
Well, it is, because the brain is being used in that, you know, in those elements, you know? So it's not just thinking about it from book learning, but being able to actually have hand-eye coordination. Anytime that you're moving, doing coordinated movements, this can all be something where the brain is actively moving, you know? In the day, you know, our grandparents used to knit and sew, and those are, you know, those are areas where the brain is actively moving and coordinating. And so the less we do of these things, the worse it is for our brain. So things like pickleball is a wonderful thing to keep engaging the brain.
Also, if people, like after they, quote, retire, who just get some sort of full-time job that causes them to interact with human beings but has some sort of coordination to the job effort, that just seems to be very helpful also, right?
Well, it's good for the job because it keeps the brain engaged as well, but it also, one of those things that you're you know, talking about is social interactions. Being able to actually, you know, interact socially with individuals and not be isolated in your environment. One of the things that you actually find that a lot of people are informed about are what's called blue zones. These are places in the world that people are average living above 100 years old in age with great mental acuity, good, you know, and dementia's next to non-existent in these places. But one of the correlating factors in all of these locations that live above 100 with great quality of life is that they all are socially engaged. They're having an active part in community. So that certainly is a big one, that again, getting a job or staying socially active, involved in community life or service or just engagement with other people is a big factor that keeps us motivated and allows that brain to be able to stay healthy.
We've talked about all the devastating effects of how COVID was handled. We talk about learning loss with kids and stuff, but the loneliness factor has to be off the charts right now, right? And also it scared people not to go do exactly what you just said. Am I in the right neighborhood there?
You are in the right neighborhood. And you know what's interesting is that we still, even though it was, you know, a couple of years ago, we're still seeing effects from that social isolation or the fear that was actually occurred with going through COVID. And we're still dealing with these effects from such a huge tragedy such as that. So, and how it was handled.
Well, my friend, we're running out of time. SolidarityHealthShare.org, of course, to find out how to make solidarity a part of your life for paying your health insurance, your health costs, and doing it in the right, proper, moral way. How do they find more of your work and find out more about this study you just talked about?
Yeah, come on to solidarityhealthshare.org. This is all in our blog. If you want to listen more about this, you can also contact us at solidarityhealthshare.org and the number that's provided, and you can get free information that gets sent out to all my newsletters on how to stay healthy and what's going on in the actual healthcare space. It's one of these to be able to belong to a solidarity community is lower costs for your healthcare choices and options for when you're actually needed to be able to stay well. So I like to think that we're truly data-driven as far as this goes and being able to make sure that patients have their options available for them in our community.
All right, Dr. Ertl, always great talking to you, and say hi to Chris for us, and we'll talk to you soon.
I sure will. Sounds good. Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
Later, my friend. That's Dr. John Ertl from SolidarityHealthShare.org. If you hit the news and blog button on top, it goes right to the story that we just talked about. So tomorrow we got People and Other Folks. Okay. We got Phil Kirp in American Commitment, followed by Congressman Schweikert, followed by Mike and Bonnie Quinn talking about Rockin' for Heroes. Rocco is Food Friday. Sean McCluskey will be here. John Camerano is doing an event for vets that we're going to talk about also in the third hour. And we're going to talk about a CNBC talking about how Bidia took over restaurant menus across the country, especially since we know the Tucson pioneer pretty well, Juan Almanza. All right, Grant and Larry Krueger coming up next. I never thought I was going to say that, but it's happening. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 1030 The Voice.